Hi, I'm Alexa. You can now hear PT Pinecast using me. Just say, hey Alexa, launch PT Pinecast. Or you could be nice and try saying please for once.
What is being polite dead these days?
To hear episodes, just say, hey Alexa, launch PT Pinecast.
Maybe throw in a please at the end.
When your goal is to stimulate learning, passion about a topic, and stimulate curiosity and all of those positive things associated with actually being additive to a field, when you capture those things, it's always about community engagement, creating a conversation, not creating the final word or the mic drop. Really, even engaging people that you disagree with in things that matter and the questions that matter.
Got a chance to talk to David Petrino again. He's a PT that's also the director of Rehab Innovations at Mount Sinai. Just a super fun guy, super smart about PT and rehab tech. Got a chance to talk with him about communicating in public about science. He and I actually both heard the same Joe Rogan episode where two guys were debating and talking about health, but really the conversation David and I wanted to talk about was how that conversation kind of came across and how we might use that when we're talking with patients in the future. Plus, we talk about a few other things that David's into. Super smart dude. Check him out on Twitter at Petrino Lab. And of course, has a book called Hacking Health, which you have to read. First round brought to you by Owens Recovery Science, a single source for PTs looking for certification in personalized blood flow restriction rehabilitation training and the equipment you need to apply it. Check out Johnny Owens and the crew at OwensRecoveryScience.com.
Broadcasting to physical therapists around the world. Heard in over 135 countries with more than 1 million downloads and counting.
This is
the PT Pinecast. The best conversations happen at happy hour. Welcome to ours.
May I introduce?
Please allow me to introduce you to.
Here's your host, physical therapist, Jimmy McKay.
David Petrino, thanks for coming back on the show.
Nice to be back.
All right, so we were talking about Joe Rogan podcast, and to bring the audience up to speed, there was a conversation with Joe Rogan, host of the Joe Rogan Experience, one of the biggest podcasts in the world, had a neuroscientist on the show and a journalist talking about diet and weight gain and how the brain comes into play.
Correct.
And these guys already have a beef.
They already have a beef.
With each other.
Yes, with each other. So there's been a few arguments and hurt feelings and Twitter wars, but...
So you had tweeted out about this, about this particular episode, because of how they were communicating.
Exactly.
So these guys started talking about, and I think it's a huge buzz topic on any form of social media. Eat this, not that, superfoods, detoxify, all those things. So I think people gravitate towards that. I mean, it's on the Joe Rogan podcast for a reason.
Yeah.
And these guys have a history not only really banging their own drum and tooting their own horns in terms of their way is the way, they've got a history with each other, going at each other either online or at conferences.
Yeah.
So what was it again? The neuroscientist was big into...
The neuroscientist was all, surprise, surprise, was all about the fact that the brain controls everything. And the journalist has been a proponent for low-carb diet for a really long time. And again, who knows who's right? And personally, like, if you look at the literature, I would actually edge toward the neuroscientist's point of view. But what was striking to me was how unlikable he was, how difficult it was for me to actually see past his clear bias against the person he was debating, the fact that he was very condescending, he was very sort of dismissive of anything that this other person was saying. And I think that it really sparked in me something about like how we change people's minds. It's a very important issue right now. You can tunnel it into any sort of field that you want. For instance, chiros versus physios,
sure.
Or vaccines versus no vaccines, Trump versus not Trump. Anything you want, you can build this in. And what we saw on the podcast was, a shining example of how not to do it.
Yeah. So I'm not going to ask you which one you thought was right, because that's not why we're talking.
Yeah.
We're talking about the stuff that you had just mentioned, which is, hey, you actually
you actually kind of, you know, lean a little bit one way, but it was the way in which we were talking, they were talking to each other. You start to fall into things like logical fallacies, like, you know, straw man arguments and attacking each other. Now you're going towards attacking the human being versus, okay, let's debate this idea or this argument. Let's talk it out.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I've said before on this show is usually the smartest scientist I know. So this is what we know now, or here's what we can learn from this study that was done. But anybody who says, I know everything about this topic, I mean, you have, that's giant red flag, but it's super easy to fall into online.
Yeah. Or at least, even if you're wise enough not to say, I know everything about this topic, to throw up the sort of, oh, come on, don't even argue with me, I know more than you.
Which PTs are super guilty of, by the way. We should take ownership of that.
Yeah, for sure. I think you see it a lot in the healthcare profession.
Yeah.
Someone says, I read this on, you know, I read this on the internet somewhere. I Googled this and it means I have cancer, and everyone rolls their eyes. And it's like, well, 1 in 1,000 times probably the person saying they have cancer has cancer.
But either way, rolling your eyes isn't helpful.
Is not helpful.
No matter what, even if they're wrong and you know they're wrong, the fact that you're dismissive isn't going to help that person or our profession or healthcare in general.
Yeah. Or your relationship with that person. Yeah.
Which is, as we know, terribly important, even if you might be understanding what the person is explaining is not 100% correct. So,
yeah.
All right. So these guys raged back and forth, and you know, the neuroscientist, if you want to listen to this podcast, it's a recent episode from Joe Rogan. The neuroscientist started on, like, he was at about 150 degrees when he started.
Yeah.
And by the end, they were both pretty much just taking, it was just taking shots at each other.
Yeah, it had just devolved by the end of it. And it really struck me, because I think in science we have a problem with this massively. We have this idea that, oh, I've done so much already, people should just listen to what I say and take it as gospel, which is like basically anti-science. Now we're talking about religion.
Right. Good point.
This is a massive issue. And we see it at all levels of science as well. And we see it in the way that science is communicated to young scientists. So there was a study that was done that showed that if you were a good thesis advisor that made sure that everyone that you were teaching fully understood you, and you were kind, and you took time to answer their questions nicely, you were perceived by your students as less intelligent than the individual who would be rude and brusque and walk in and talk in jargon in their lectures and storm out and not answer anybody's questions. And that was, to me, that was like such a jarring finding, because I always would observe things like that. I would observe the fact that I was easy to understand, and people in science thought that that was undermining. They thought that what that meant was I was thinking simplistically. But when the reality was, well, it's much harder to give a lecture that everyone can understand.
Right, right. Clear communication is actually terribly difficult.
Because it means you need to know the topic very well. Whereas I can walk into almost anything, give a lecture in jargon, buzzwords, and then get angry at anyone who asks a question and storm out. You know, that's a very, very simple thing to do. But somehow in the sort of Stockholm syndrome that is the sort of scientific environment, we've created this environment whereby we perceive, you know, it's just like in the dating world, right? You know, like someone treats you mean, you go out, you chase them all the harder. It's exactly like that in the scientific world as well. It's like, oh, if they're talking in words that I can't understand, that means that I need to like work harder, and they must be super smart.
They've just positioned themselves. They are clearly superior, because I don't even understand the basic words they're using.
Exactly.
I can see that. So, okay. So now we've set the table, right? There was this podcast interview. It's an example, one of many. The fact that it happened on Joe Rogan's podcast, you know, amplifies the issue where, I forget who said it. Maybe it was like P.T. Barnum. So Barnum said it's easier to fool people than convince them that they've been fooled. So this gets into, like, no wonder why society at large is like kind of confused on what to do, or why they're looking towards either pseudoscience, or why they gravitate towards the very edge, is because those are the things we're kind of presenting them with. Like, we talk down, or we dismiss, or we roll our eyes. Like, so that's the reason I wanted to bring this up, is like, so that's what happened. These two guys were going at it, and I think what happens is people listen to that and they just picked whichever side they probably already had, or whichever side they felt like closer to, instead of looking at the science.
Exactly. And I mean, my first thought when I was listening to this debate was when I was listening to the way the neuroscientist was interacting with the journalist, I was just like, well, that guy's not changing anybody's mind.
Right. And that's the idea. That's your
point. That's the whole point.
Ask yourself, what's your point for coming on this podcast? It's to, if your goal, well, here's the problem. I think they're trying to, when they come in, they're throwing haymakers, verbal haymakers. They're trying to convince everyone to see their way. And that's impossible.
I'm not even sure.
Really?
When I hear someone, you know, engaging the level of discourse that this guy was engaging in, Stefan was his name. It's really about showing people how smart you are.
Okay.
That was it. Right, it's like, and I think that a lot of people aren't very mindful of their mission when they walk in. And the question is, do you want someone to hear you talk and go, wow, that person's super smart, I could never be them? Or do you want someone to hear you talk and go, I'm going to start like really following up on what that guy said, because, or, you know, what that person said, because I think that what they said had merit, and I'm going to read about this, and I'm inspired to learn more. And really, he was falling into the former. He was just like, I want to walk in, wipe the floor with this guy,
drop the mic and walk out,
embarrass this guy, and then have everyone think how smart I am.
Yeah, my dad threw this at me once when I took over a radio station, and I was so nervous because I was like 24 and I had to be the boss, right? And after, he's like, well, what's the problem? My dad's a firefighter, very pragmatic. Like, something on fire, put it out.
Yep.
So he's like, do you want to get it right or be right? And I'm like, they're the same thing. And he's like, no, they're not. Think about it. Do you want to get it right or do you want to be right? And I wanted to be right. I wanted to be the boss. When really, ultimately, I really deep down inside, I wanted to get it right, but I didn't know how.
Yeah.
So I think that was, sorry. So that's what happened. What should happen? Or give examples, because you go to all sorts of different kind of conferences.
Yeah.
What's it look like? What's it feel like when people do it well?
I guess, in all cases, when your goal is to stimulate learning, when your goal is to stimulate passion about a topic and stimulate curiosity and all of those positive things associated with actually being additive to a field rather than being your own personal brand, when you capture those things, it's always about community engagement, creating a conversation, not creating the final word or the mic drop, really even engaging people that you disagree with in things that matter and the questions that matter. And, you know, every time I go to a conference that I really enjoy, that I feel like I've grown or learned something from, it's always about exposing myself to something I've never been exposed to before, doing it in a vulnerable way where I've got trust with the people around me, so I don't feel like anyone's going to judge me for not knowing, you know, this or that fact, or, you know, not necessarily being the full bottle on this topic or that topic, just exposing myself completely naively to a whole new group of facts, being open to it, and then going off and doing my own research and coming to my own conclusions and having conversations with friends about it.
Is it more difficult to do that in science and academia because it's like hierarchical? Like, it's like, if I look where I am, like, you run a lab at Mount Sinai, shouldn't you know, like, you should know everything. Like, you should never be like, oh, I honestly don't know. Like, that's difficult, or must be, or I would think if I were in that position, be difficult to be like, I honestly don't know this, but I will look into it. To me, like, saying that now, that sounds most intelligent, but that's got to be hard.
Yeah, I think it's all about ego, you know. I think I was schooled early on because I was a PhD student at age 23, finished my PhD in 2.5 years, so like super quick. And then I was lecturing medical students, PT students, neuroanatomy, neuropathology, things like that. I was really young, and it was funny because I used to notice that if I had shaved, no one would take me seriously. And if I hadn't shaved, I'd get a little bit more respect, but only a little bit more.
There's a book about that. I just read it, called Rebel Talent. And the whole book explains exactly that, or most of that.
One of the things I realized was that a whole bunch of people were just prejudging me because I was 5 years younger than them.
Yeah.
And they were coming to learn, and they were paying money to learn. And they were just like, and not a lot of money because it's Australian college. But, you know, they were really sort of, I don't know, irked. They weren't upset, but they were kind of like, "Why? Who's this kid and why is he teaching me?" And what I learned from the experience was to walk into a room, and the first thing that I started doing in all of my lectures was, when I was meeting a class for the first time, I would tell them who I am, tell them my background, and then tell them my job is not to know, my job is to facilitate. So there are going to be things where I'm not going to know the answer to your question, and my only commitment to you as your teacher is I'm going to go and find the answer, and I'm going to give you the answer. You'll never not get an answer to the question unless there is not currently, you know, a known answer to the question you're asking. And what I realized was, once you sort of set that level, as opposed to, because people were coming in with the sort of traditional expectation of, oh, here's another, you know, arrogant lecturer, except for guys 5 years younger than me, like, what does he know? And he probably, you know, probably hungover, probably doesn't know shit, you know, like, right. And as soon as I just stepped in and I was like, well, you know, like, I've done a PhD and here was what I did and it was pretty involved and I know a little bit about neuroanatomy by this stage, but by the way, I don't know everything, so let's learn together. As soon as you sort of like extended that olive branch, it was stunning to me how quickly people sort of got it and, you know, wanted to be friends and wanted, you know, they were starving for community because ordinarily there is that hierarchical
division.
Like, yeah, I'm up here, you're down there. And I was just like, nah, we're all going to learn together. And
less you, me, less more we.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what I'm really good at, because I mean, in my opinion, the only thing a PhD really teaches you is how to learn things quick. And that's what I'm good at. So I could learn things quicker than them because I knew where to look and I knew how to reference and I knew how to do all of those things as a researcher. So that was my commitment to them. If they asked me a question I couldn't answer, I'd find it.
So that's where these guys really failed. And that's where I think a lot of these conversations online, that's the thing. Like, literally anybody can have a podcast. Like, you don't need a license to have a blog. You can start a website about anything and you can spout off. And unfortunately, these things get referenced and cited and shared. And these people, you know, for better or for worse, get put on these pedestals or they get shared or they get follows. Like, just that word, right? Like, followers. Like, who wants a follower?
Like, it's
just
who wants to be a follower?
Yeah, like, just line up and follow them. So, all right. So, what would be a suggestion on how we, anybody listening, whether they're a PT student or anybody listening to this, how do they do it better? You know, I mean, like, I think your example right there is definitely number one, which is walk, like, be honest and be vulnerable. Like, hey, I do know this, right? But I don't know this. Like, honesty, transparency should be first instead of stay in your lane, bro, which we do a lot of.
No, I mean, I think always, you know, coming into it being humble is number one. Like, most people who are authentically being humble at the beginning, it's hard to fake. And so as soon as someone sees you being open, being ready to take on a different point of view, being ready to just genuinely engage in a conversation that is two-sided and you're not waiting for your minute to speak,
right. You're actually listening.
Actually listening. You're reading it back to them. You're saying, did I understand you right? Here's what I think about what you just said. Having a proper conversation, that's crucial. If you do find yourself like hitting a point where you absolutely cannot agree with this individual, like, you know, let's say, for instance, I'm sitting across the table from an anti-vaxxer, right? That is someone whose opinion I cannot reconcile. I do not agree with. But if you're sitting there being asked to have a conversation with one another, find some common ground. Like, that's where you got to start. Right. It because, and this is a bit of a loaded question because sometimes I think it actually is, but is the point of you two sitting across from one another to engage in a screaming argument where you've got fan bases and both of your fan bases just disagree over who won the screaming argument?
And also, you've got economy. Like, your livelihood, some of these people's livelihoods. So there's a reason for them to dig their heels in and never listen.
Well, yeah, both of these dudes had books.
Right. Sure.
And both
speaking
of the
tours.
Yeah.
Classes.
And both of their books were on opposing views. And, you know, there is a massive conflict of interest there.
That's why there's a slide in presentations or papers. Yeah. Like, here are my conflicts of interest.
Neither of their, you know, both of their opinions were suspect just because of that. Just because of the fact that they both got books and they have book sales and they have, you know, and I shouldn't say too much because I've got a book, but thankfully my book is bipartisan, but the point was, you know, they walked in there thinking that it's life or death because of economy, because of like, oh, if this guy gets one over on me, people are gonna
go down.
Yeah, sales go down, and that does complicate things, and that does make it less likely that you're going to be open-minded about stuff.
So everything you just said really is like, I mean, I hate to go back to that thing, but everything you need to know you learned in kindergarten, right? Be nice, be open, be transparent, listen actively. Like,
yeah.
So there wasn't a technological or a super advanced solution to this people problem. It's a communication solution to a communication problem, really.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it always ends up inevitably coming down to communication. I mean, these guys, it was a disaster. I mean, again, everyone can listen to the podcast, but it was like there wasn't a likable character except, I mean, Joe was pretty funny.
Right. As he always is, which is why he's got one of the biggest podcasts in the
world. Yeah, but
I think everybody lost on that.
Everybody lost, yeah, because I can't imagine if I were a fan of either one of them, I can't imagine hearing what happened in that podcast and not thinking you're both pathetic.
Yeah,
like, because they really sort of broke down into name calling and being condescending, yeah. And it was just like, this isn't what good discourse is.
And that's why I wanted to converse about it. And really the ultimate takeaway is like, okay, think about how you do this. And believe me, I'm thinking about how I do stuff. Listen, I have a degree in communications. Mm. Am I bad at communications with people I know? Absolutely. Like, I can be terrible at it. But being open and being honest about it, that's the only way to get better.
Yeah.
So I thought that was a good example. We could at least find something good in it in terms of like, hey, maybe if you're in that position to represent a point of view, the way to best do it isn't that.
Yeah.
And it's this. It's open. It's active listening and stuff like that. Quick break. Then I want to talk about where you've been. I want to talk about games.
Sure.
I want to talk about video. I mean, this is the funniest thing we talked about. When you were 9, your parents said, go to, you know, study, do your homework, because you're not going to have video games in the future. And here we are.
The PT Pinecast will be right back.
Show's brought to you by Aureus Medical Staffing, the single source for PTs wanting to do what you want to do, which is be a physical therapist where you want to do it. They've got positions anywhere in the U.S. All 50 states. Yeah, we get asked this a lot. Alaska, Hawaii, Colorado. You want to do some mountains? You like rivers, lakes, ocean? They got you covered. AureusMedical.com. It's very simple to explain what they do. That's why I love working with them. They find PT's jobs, doing what they want to do, where they want to do it. You put yourself through school, lots of blood, sweat, and tears. Now you decide where you work. Aureus has you covered. AureusMedical.com. No obligation. Just check them out and see what they have to offer. They've been doing this for a couple of decades. AureusMedical.com.
This is the PT Pinecast.
Want to thank Brooks Rehabilitation, their Institute of Higher Learning, for sponsoring the show. Residency and fellowship opportunities is what they offer. Check them out at brooksihl.org. Also, hosting their 4th annual scholarly symposium that's going on June 22nd in Jacksonville, Florida. Information about the symposium can be found at brooksihl.org. Keynote presentation this year by the editor of PTJ, Alan Jetty. I'll be on hand doing some talks and some live podcasting. Looking for CEUs and to expand your knowledge base? Look no further than brooksihl.org.
And we're back. Let's get back to the show.
All right. So you were at GDC, which stands for
Game Developers Conference.
And that was where? West Coast?
Yep. San Francisco.
So what goes on there, and why the heck was a PT invited to kind of hang out? And were you talking out there too?
Yeah. I gave a talk.
Yeah.
And it was fun. In fact, well, first of all, my MO is showing up at conferences that I don't belong at. Like, that's where I learn the most, because, you know,
just do it more. We should all do it more.
Yeah. We've discussed conferences before, and it's like a whole bunch of people having the same arguments, having the same opinions, and it can get a little bit, you know, a little bit annoying. Whereas I often like just showing up places I don't belong and hearing what how other people in other industries solve problems that we probably have. In this particular case, a friend of mine who is a game developer, who also helps to organize this big conference in San Francisco, she had heard about some of my work where I'm using virtual reality to treat chronic pain. And she said, you know what, you should give a talk at this thing and come check it out because it's an experience. And sure enough, it was. It was at the Moscone Center in San Francisco. It's like three massive buildings across multiple streets. There were tens of thousands. I don't know how many tens of thousands, but I think about 40 or 50,000 people at this conference.
And who were like... Is this like gamers, developer? Is this the mix of everybody?
Mix of everybody. There were people who make games. There were people who were like, I was swarmed by people who work for Amazon, Mozilla, Google, you know, like all of those people. There were gamers just interested in what's the next big thing and what's going on. There were tech vendors. There were, you know, people showing.
So a lot of intersections, a lot of different intersections.
Yeah.
So real briefly, we can't skip over this. Like, talk about your research with chronic pain and VR, like the reason you're out there.
Yeah. So, I mean, we started this a little while ago, speaking primarily to a physio audience. We all know about mirror box therapy, which is this way of treating chronic neuropathic pain, specifically usually people who have lost a limb. You put your missing limb into a box and there's a mirror on the side of it, and you put your intact limb next to the mirror. And then when you look in the mirror, you see a limb that looks a lot like the limb you're missing. And you can get it to do all sorts of things based on what your intact limb is doing. Wildly successful in treating chronic pain and wonderful, except for A, it's not always that practical to walk around with a mirror box.
True.
B, in the population I was really thinking about, which is spinal cord injury, a mirror box doesn't do so well because you don't have agency and ability to move your own limbs. So we just started playing around with this idea of what would happen if we started creating virtual reality environments where you look down, you saw an arm that looks like kind of like your arm, and it's doing things. And this was based off of both the literature around mirror box therapy and also the literature in chronic pain in general, showing that if you can visually improve the relationship that someone has with their painful limb, you can usually decrease their level of pain. And we ran a short pilot in a bunch of people with spinal cord injury who had like long-standing chronic pain. And we noticed that everyone responded positively to the virtual reality environment. Every single person was experiencing significant, you know, 35 to 40% reductions in their chronic pain.
That's a big deal.
It's a big deal.
It's a huge deal.
So, especially for, you know, looking at something on a iPhone screen, you know?
Oh, that's the kind of... I mean, you're not even using goggles.
I mean, we've got fancy ones, but we were using... Google Cardboard, because we wanted this to be ultra low cost.
Right.
So
if it costs $7 million, who cares?
Yeah.
But if you can get it to anybody, then it's applicable.
Yeah.
Cool.
And so we kept playing around with it. We recruited more people and the findings kept holding. So we have some funds to run some research on this and look into who responds, who doesn't. What sort of content gets the strongest responses? How immersed do you have to be to actually get a response from this? We've started building a lot of 360 degree video content. We've started studying the sort of psychology of people who respond versus the psychology of people who don't respond. And it's a really interesting area of research. And turns out the crew out there at GDC were really interested in it as well. Because again, you know, you're in a conference that you don't necessarily belong at, but people are hungry for that sort of content. So what was interesting was I was in a half full room. Because it was a massive conference, like I said, like tens of thousands of people, rooms all around and things like that, and a million events happening all at once. And I was in this half full room and I started talking, and I started, because I knew I was talking to a crowd that didn't really necessarily know much about neuroscience, I started off with basically an entry level, this is neuroscience 101, this is how your brain, you know, creates a representation of your body and
perception and
homunculi and things like that. And I was a little bit disheartened at the beginning because, like, there was a lot of people on their phones, and I was like, oh, man, these nerds, no one's even listening. But I just kept going, and what I realized was people were texting their friends, and the room filled up, and then the organizers had to send us off to a breakout room where we were there for like an hour and a half afterwards because there were so many people that were like, I had no idea that the games I was making could have social impact, could do good in medicine. Thank you so much for your talk. And I was like, this is why I attend conferences where I don't belong, because you just get to put out that point of view that people haven't thought about before.
And they were hungry for it.
Hungry. Yes, absolutely. But they wanted to hear more. I couldn't get away from them. So it was good.
Fantastic. So what's coming? You know, what's the next part, either in your research, or I'm sure, you know, you were there for a little while and you're bumped around, and I'm, you know, your brain, you don't turn that off, and you're looking at what other people are doing and you're saying, how do I add that to what we're doing?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Everyone's trying to get more immersive. Everyone's trying to say, like, how can we create a real experience that's not a real experience? Us as well, you know, like, what we're noticing in our research is that there is definitely a link between how immersed you are in the relationship and how much pain relief you experience. So the obvious next step is, what strategies can we build in to make you more immersed? The flip side to this, which I find super interesting, and I sit on, there's a law school here in New York, the Cardozo School of Law, and they pull me in once every 6 months or 12 months to sit on a board where they go over new law cases that are related to virtual reality.
Wait, what?
Yes. So, and these things range from property disputes. So
virtual property.
Virtual property disputes.
In games.
Yep. Where someone has, like, you know, put a billboard up on someone else's land or that they paid for.
Wow.
And lawyers have to, like, deal with that. All the way through to, I went to a virtual reality exhibit that was showing a horror virtual reality film, and now I have PTSD. And who has to deal with that? Oh, actually, another one, because we've got a physio population here. Benign paroxysmal positional vertigo, BPPV, happening as a result of developers spending too much time in VR, is on the rise. So these are all things that we need to think about. These are all things that are happening because you're exposing your brain to this second reality.
Environment, a new environment that the body's not, you know, used to that.
How young is too young? How old is too old? All of these things. Yeah.
Wow, that's cool. So that's a lot. I mean, that's some stuff I didn't even thought about.
Yeah, it's coming.
So what are they doing? So, all right. So virtual reality, you can see, you know, there's a third dimension because you've got, now you've got proprioception, there's space. Mm-hmm. Of course, you can put something over the ears or sound, but now you're going into things like touch and those, like, haptic suits and stuff like that. I mean, just as you were saying, when you brought law up, I'm thinking, well, you have haptic, that's like touch. Can you have improper touch? Like,
absolutely. You can. That's already happening. So that's already happening where people are being sexually assaulted. Their avatars are being sexually assaulted.
But they're feeling it.
And this is pre-haptics, you know.
Now, what are pre-haptics?
This is before we have haptic systems.
Got it.
But people are still, they're already so embodied and invested in their avatar that if someone comes along and, like, you know, disrespects them, they feel that. They're like, that's like it's happening to me. And that's not airy-fairy liberal nonsense. That is scientific fact. We showed in monkeys, in fact, in a previous life when I was a monkey physiologist, we showed that if I virtually tapped a monkey's hand in a virtual environment, I could see his sensory cortex light up at the same rhythm as the tapping taps. Stimulus, even though I wasn't tapping him in real life. So he was feeling that. He was looking down in his virtual reality, looking down at the hand that looked like his hand, seeing an object enter his space and touch him on the hand, and his sensory neurons were responding to it. So we know that sort of mind-body connection exists in virtual reality, even in animals. Wow. So it's a genuine, legitimate concern that what you do in virtual space can affect you in real world.
All right, so I'm not going to hold you to this prediction, but make a prediction that is 5 or 10 years out that is going to seem insane to me, but it's not that far of a stretch. Like something in this world, in terms of games and rehab or any of these intersections that you got at GDC.
You know, there's a lot going on. I hate sounding boring, but honestly, I feel like Ready Player One was the extreme version.
You haven't read that. Or, sorry, the movie came out too.
Yeah, the movies, read the book, the movie.
I don't want to be a snob or anything, but the book was way better.
But it's kind of like, it's where we're going. You know, we love screens.
Completely immersive.
And we love screens more than we love regular life many times. Companies have a lot of reasons to keep us looking at screens rather than keep us looking at regular life, and build haptics into that. And you know,
why would you leave?
Yeah,
you just stay at home, and then you can leave home but through the screen. Yeah, I mean, Cory Doctorow always seems to write you know, stuff that you're like, that would never happen, and then a couple of years later you're like, that's pretty much happening.
Yeah,
I mean, look at Gene Roddenberry, right, with like Star Trek. Like, short of beaming people places, like, most of that stuff's kind of happening.
Yeah.
Remember when the Nextels came out, the walkie-talkie cell phones?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was the communicator device.
Yep.
I mean, we're getting there with all that stuff.
Yeah, and there's a lot of interesting literature out there about how science fiction informs technology development, because we watch those movies and you go, wouldn't that be cool? And so it inspires invention.
If there isn't a hoverboard... Before I'm able to use a hoverboard, I'm going to be so pissed. Like, if it only comes around when I have grandkids and I can't get on it,
yeah.
I'm going to be pissed off. I'm just putting that out there.
Oh, man. Yeah. That's a bunch of broken promises there.
I know. Last thing we do, parting shot.
This is The Parting Shot.
The Parting Shot is brought to you by Rock Tape. More than just a tape company, Rock Tape is a movement company, tools and education for medical professionals. If you're looking to help your patients go stronger longer, check out rocktape.com.
We talked about two big topics, really: science communication and really like gamification and where is that world going. So your parting shot can be on either of those or neither of those. What's the last thing you want to leave the audience for with this episode thinking about?
Oh my God, be kind. I think that has to be...
Translates all.
Bit like, you're never going to change someone's mind if you're not kind to them. And we saw it in this podcast, and it just keeps coming up in the current political climate and in any work conflict that you care to think of. Always, you've got to be kind. You've got to cross... You know, you've got to cross the barriers. You've got to find some common ground. You've got to just have good, meaningful, nice conversations with people. Even if you're having a debate with someone, no one's gonna be on your side if you're just attacking the other person. You know, listen, be nice, disagree nicely, and be friends with people you disagree with.
Yeah, difficult to improve upon that. David Petrino, what's your Twitter? It's Petrino Lab?
At Petrino Lab, yep.
Yeah, all right. So follow this guy. He puts out good stuff and more good stuff. I think we need another episode about stuff, because you mentioned some stuff before we hit record that's coming soon that I think deserves its own conversation. Super excited for that. So let's not...
You know where I live.
Yeah, we won't spoil that, but that is very, very cool. And PTs around the world are going to geek out about this stuff. Appreciate your time, man. Always appreciate the beer, too.
Like
me having a fat tire.
Love it.
The PT Pinecast is a product of PT Pinecast LLC. It is hosted and produced by PT Pinecast CEO Jim McKay and CBO Sky Donovan from Marymount University. We talk PT, drink beer, and record it. This has been another pour from the PT Pinecast. The PT Pinecast is intended for educational purposes only. No clinical decision-making should be based solely on one source. While care is taken to ensure accuracy, factual errors can be present. More on the show at ptpinecast.com.
Our home on the internet. ptpinecast.com. Created by Build PT. Build PT provides marketing services specifically for private practice PTs.
From website development and hosting,
providing content marketing solutions
for PT clinics across the country.
See what Build PT can do for you today
at buildpt.com.
The PT Pinecast proudly supports the Travis Mills Foundation. On April 10th, 2012, United States Army Staff Sergeant Travis Mills of the 82nd Airborne was critically injured on his third tour of duty in Afghanistan by an IED while on patrol, losing portions of both legs and both arms. He is one of only five quadruple amputees from the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan to survive his injuries. Thanks to his amazing strength, courage, and incredible will to live, the heroic actions of the man in his unit, the prayers of thousands, and all the healthcare providers at the Walter Reed Army Medical Center, Travis remains on the road to recovery. He founded the Travis Mills Foundation, a nonprofit organization formed to benefit and assist combat injured veterans. Travis lives by his motto, never give up, never quit. To support the Travis Mills Foundation or to find out more, visit TravisMills.org.